This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, Let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, it will get done, because you'll do it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thank you, my good brother Kwaku. Appreciate you. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times I'm going to give are Eastern time. Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday, Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Monday and Wednesday. Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney from Benton Harbor, Michigan. His program is 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. May 11th. Do not attempt to domesticate me. I cannot protect you with dishpan hands. George Edward Tate. We are fighting the idea of inevitability of Western culture. We are fighting against genderless, clone, all-consuming, inhuman European cult. We're a godless people toy with humanity for fun and profit. Embracing European culture, African people progressively die. So we are fighting to be African. Only with this knowing can we, with a deep and heartfelt gratification, acknowledge that the African way offers no justification or model for homosexuality. There is only one African tradition. That tradition requires that husbands and wives defend the perimeter and core, respectfully, of our spaces so that our sons are not turned into others' daughters and our daughters are not turned into others' sons. Affirm, I am African by every procreative measure. Affirm, I am African by every procreative measure. May 12th. Oppression not only makes a wise man mad, it robs him also of his self-respect. Alexander Crummell. What happens to a mind oppressed with hope and without knowledge of hope's possibilities? Look around. See the individuals concealing themselves from each other, dressing up in spiritual pain and mental privatization with whatever artificialities their plastic can buy. Minds catapulted beyond sanity no longer believe in self. But madness is different. For existing in a state of confused rage can be a good sign.
a sign of health and vitality if you have not quite lost your sanity. For it only means that you have been unable to reconcile yourself with this particular reality. You cannot make human sense of your conditions, situation, or prospects, knowing inside that your power places you outside and above this deranged matrix. What you see does not fit what you know you know. What you see is not rational, given a creator and a righteous universal order. While insanity may do so, madness will not always rob Africans of their self-respect. In fact, it can do just the opposite. No matter how confused and enraged, if we are clear enough about our divinity and our oppressors in divinity, and we unfailingly work to empower ourselves and those we should love, our rejection of the insanity all above us only serves to increase our self-respect. Struggling to be sane in a sea of insanity can do nothing less than strengthen us. Ashe. Affirm, I am perfectly sane. Affirm, I am perfectly sane. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, we have the honor and the pleasure of having one of my favorite people as our guest today. And this gentleman is multi-talented, multidisciplinarian. He is, man, I tell you, anywhere he is, he's on it. Brother Tejumala Oluboni. Brother Teju, how you doing, man?
All right, Brad, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. You sound great. You sound good.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's good.
I hope we can keep it that way.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to make sure I let the listening audience know who we have on the line, you know, in our discussions today. You know, we have a brother who is, man, as I said, a multidisciplinary. In fact, Teju, without being a medical doctor, but when I think of, you know, you, I think of Imhotep, the world's first multi-genius, you know, and I'm serious. I put you in that category because of all the stuff that you do, you know. In fact, we can fill in some stuff, but I'm going to read this because that'll give our listeners a clear understanding, you know, of who you are. Teju, the storyteller. That's right. He's a great prevaricator. Teju, the storyteller. Tejumala Oluboni, Brother Teju, is a storyteller, folklorist, and oral historian. He is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He was awarded a federal foreign language graduate fellowship to study African languages at the University of Indiana in Bloomington. As an educator, he has taught African literature, American African literature, creative writing, and English in the American African Studies Department of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He has also taught at Marquette University, all those places he was fired from, but that's another story. He has traveled in Africa, Europe, China, Taiwan, Canada, Mexico, and most of the states in this country, performing, conducting seminars, and presenting workshops on subjects related to the world of African people. He is a published author. An MC at the Rotary Club debate on reparations introduced him by saying, Teju sees this as his mission, to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Brothers and sisters, I welcome my friend, my dear friend, who I've known almost all my life since I was a youngster, and always respect and admire, Brother Teju Mala Oluboni. Brother Teju, thank you.
Well, hello, how are you?
All right, man, what's happening? We're going to talk about linguistics, since you are linguistic, and talk about words and how this society uses words. And, you know, one of the things I've been upset with for quite a long time is the word discipline. How this society...
Excuse me, say that again.
One of the things that always upset me is how this society uses the word discipline.
Oh, discipline. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always said discipline is self-imposed order. That's discipline. You're disciplined. If I took your course when you were at the universities, I would be given a syllabus, right? Possibly.
Yep.
And, mm-hmm. and all the stuff that's in there, they call a study. What do they call the studies at the university? They call them what?
Say that again?
I'm sorry. What do they call the studies at the university? They call them what? They call them disciplines, right?
Oh, yeah. In everything, they mm-hmm. call it that.
They call it disciplines. They don't call it. See, and so when you watch television and they talk about somebody who has done something and done something wrong, they're talking about, the league is going to discipline them, or society is going to discipline.
Right.
No, they're not. They're going to punish him.
Well, just a minute.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Depends on not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
See, not necessarily punished. Okay. But straightened out.
Okay.
Okay. I'll tell you why. And let me just say this. It is said in many different, like teachers have, like the Buddha, like Jesus and others have disciples, right?
Okay.
Now, disciple and discipline, the same word.
Mm.
It just means a disciple is a disciplined student.
Mm-hmm.
And discipline means to follow a certain order. To follow a certain order or a certain structure that has been laid out before you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this, so it does not, sometimes to be disciplined, actually, it doesn't mean to be punished. It means to be put back in order.
Right.
Now, sometimes to be put back in order means getting that butt whipped when you're young. All right. Sometimes to be put back in order simply means, let me explain this to you, or let us discuss this until you see the order that I'm trying to present to you.
Okay.
But it doesn't necessarily mean punished. Mm-hmm. That just, that sometimes is what it takes to put something, you know, back in the proper order or back in the prescribed order.
Mm-hmm. And so therefore, if one wants to put that order, put you back into order when you're out of order,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now we're using semantics here, I believe, to really put you back in order because you lack discipline. When you don't have discipline, you get punishment. And punishment can mean that, you know, you can't go to the dance, or you can't, you know, you got to stay home, you know,
mm-hmm.
or something on the lines of corporal punishment. But the bottom line is to correct behavior, to correct the situation.
Almost.
Okay.
Almost. It is. It does mean to. No. Just a minute, let me stop. I will agree with what you said, to correct the behavior or to correct whatever's happening. Right.
Okay.
But it does not. It does not imply that that comes from an outside energy. It can be internal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
See, because look. Okay. Let me give you a good example. I know this brother named Oshiemi, right?
Okay.
No, I'm going to give you a good example.
Okay.
Oshiemi is a student, particularly of Northeast Africa, right? So you are a disciplined student of Northeast Africa, which means that, like, nobody forces you, nobody punishes you. You impose yourself. You impose that on yourself, okay,
mm-hmm.
to carry out certain structural studies and stuff. Okay. So discipline doesn't mean that it comes from the outside. Okay. And again, it could be if you know, we use that word for spanking or punishment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does not necessarily mean that. It just means to, like, follow a certain structural, okay?
Sure.
Structure of behavior, structure of learning, structure of this, like that. And again, that's why they called Jesus's students disciples. It meant that they were dedicated students of Jesus' teaching.
Okay. Okay. But that's, they were disciplined. They weren't punished.
They were self-disciplined. Right.
And that's why I said at the beginning, discipline is self-imposed mm-hmm. order. Because when I go to your class, when you were at Marquette, when you were at UWM or whatever, Wisconsin, you're going to give me either a syllabus or you're going to give me some instruction for me to do some work that has to be done mm-hmm. by a certain time. Now, mm-hmm. if I'm playing bid whist all the time and playing video games with all my guys, you know, I'm not getting my work done. I'm not disciplined enough to get my work done. And the punishment for me will be bad grades, or the punishment for me, you know, could be even deeper. I don't know. You know, I'm just saying. I just take an issue with this society that when they talk about discipline, what they really mean is punishment. But punishment has a deep connotation. So they don't want to use that word over the airwaves. They wonder you, well, the league, especially how they talk about football or basketball, you know, the league is going to discipline him. You know, I mean, somebody who is at that craft, high up in that craft, is disciplined enough. He or even she made it to that point. But because they've done something that might be egregious or done something that are against the rules, then they, you know, got to suffer the consequences. And that's where punishment comes in. Be that a suspension, be that money taken from you, whatever. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get off that one. We're going to get off that one because we have a lot more things to talk about in terms of linguistics. And that's what you are. You know, you deal with words, you know, and you research. And so that's why, no people don't want to debate you, man, because, you know, you're armed. You're well armed.
Well, the major thing is that, like, all right, I make a presumption, right? I make a presumption, and I presume this, that no matter what I'm talking about, I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. So that means, like, I presume that everything that I'm saying is incorrect. So that means that whatever I'm saying, I've got to consistently research and prove. Okay? When you said, hey, Teju, you coming on the program? We want to talk about Northeast Africa. Right. I'm like, okay, let me go study some more, like, since the last time you talked to me. Oh, man, I did about probably 7 or 8 different articles and looking at what the latest information is on the linguistics of the area, the population of the area, the history of the area and stuff like that. Now I can talk about it, but I still don't think I'm absolutely correct. I think I still got to look under and over and behind everything I'm saying and everything I'm doing. Okay, I can make some assertions, right?
Right.
Okay. But that assertion, I don't presume in making the assertion, right, that I'm correct.
And that's the final word on it. There's more out there. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. You know, especially Kemet, or what the Greeks called Egypt, has always been another serious situation in terms of, like, you see Dr. Awas, Said Awas. I don't know if you know him. But he was the antiquities chair at the museum in Cairo, and he was on TV all the time. He's still on TV. But, of course, his whole thing was, as he said to his sister, yes, Egypt, but they were not black. No, they were not black. And he's talking about from the very beginning, they were not black.
Well, yeah, but see, here's the thing is, he's looking from his perspective, right? And in his perspective, his brain will not let him understand mm-hmm. that it was African people who did everything before him, who was Arabs,
right,
came in, like they trickled in, and then in the 7th century they invaded,
right,
and took over. And then they pretended that they're the ones who did all the stuff that they discovered.
Right.
But, of course, I expect them to, because that's how they are. Mm-hmm. See, in their own brains, they cannot admit that they didn't do anything but borrow everything. They can't admit that. That would totally upset the way they see the world, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And that's not uncommon, okay? I mean, for example, people pretend that these United States were empty mm-hmm. before the Europeans came.
Right.
They pretend that in this area of the world, that they were the first to discover it. They even say they discovered it. Mm-hmm. When Asians, Africans, Islanders, and everybody else had been here back and forth, before any Europeans even knew it was here.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, like, the major thing about that is right now they control the narrative, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they control the narrative, what they've done in controlling the narrative is to make people believe that they are the authorities about the subject. And the fact of the matter is, they're not, okay? At all.
Mm-hmm.
But they want people to think that they're the authority. Okay? And that being the case, they convince everybody that they're the authority. The guy that you're talking about, like, he looks at those things and he only points out the things that reminds him of him.
Mm, right, right.
Okay? He's not even going to show anything. That he won't show any of the artwork, mm-hmm. any of the carving
right.
that don't look like him.
Mm-hmm.
See, so, I mean, again, that's the whole situation, like everywhere, right?
Right.
That's the whole situation. And that's what we're up against, particularly because we have been basically educated by them,
right?
All right, and being educated by them, we're subject to them. Okay,
and we're led to believe that we've never done nothing; that we were running around a jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having anything of significance or consequence, and nothing.
Well,
to be
and
the truth.
And the thing about it, is we just don't know.
Yeah, a lot
the
of
problem
us don't.
Is, well, yeah, but see, we have been taught. We've been taught to not know. Okay? We've been taught to not know. And that's the problem. We've been taught to not know.
Yeah.
And again, they've taught us well. I mean, you and I, we can't. Well, let's put it like this. If you and I are discussing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we're discussing Africa, right? We can't even discuss Africa in the African languages.
Right.
So we got to use the European language to discuss Africa. And by definition, the words in the European language say that Africa is less than Europe.
Mm-hmm.
By meaning of the words we use. So that's the real difficulty when you talk about a perspective, et cetera, you know. So the thing about it is we have to understand that when we are speaking a European language, unfortunately, we are still thinking
right.
like Europeans.
Yes. Right.
See? And then we have to understand that. And it's not a criticism. I'm the same way. I'm talking about myself, too. It's not a criticism, but we have to be always cautious about everything we say. And understand that it may be modified by European thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean they are relentless in terms of impacting us. You know.
Well, yeah, that's true. And of course, they did that because they had nothing, and they saw somebody with something. Okay, it's just like if you well, anyway, they celebrate criminals. Yeah, in their history.
Yeah, criminals and criminality. And they do. They do.
Well, in their mythology, they celebrate criminals. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, even for little kids, they celebrate criminals. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's one of the stories they teach little kids? There's a story called Jack and the Beanstalk, right?
Mm, yeah.
Now, what is Jack? Mm-hmm. He's a thief. No.
No, simple. Not right. No, it is. You're right.
See, I'm saying he goes into, look here, he ain't got nothing. Right.
Right.
His mama says, look, man, we ain't got nothing, man. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so in the story, he gets these beans and he grows a beanstalk, right? Mm-hmm. And when he goes up the beanstalk, all right. When he goes up the beanstalk and he got to travel, first of all, he got to travel to a different place. He goes up the beanstalk into Africa. Let's go up the beanstalk in a giant's territory. Mm. And what does he do? Mm-hmm. Man, he steals the gold. And when he steals the gold and comes back, he cuts down the structure that... Mm. That golden place relied on. He cuts down the structure that got him there so nobody could get back. All right? Mm-hmm. And in one of the stories, it says that the reason he cut down the beanstalk was because the giant was climbing down the beanstalk, right?
Right, after him, yes.
Now, one other version of the story says he cuts down the beanstalk because he don't want nobody else to get none of that gold. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, see, even the mythology and all that kind of stuff points out that what we were as a people. But the thing about it is we tell those stories not knowing that those stories really tell what the religio-philosophy and the mentality of the people who wrote the story, mm-hmm. okay? So let me not go so far off the subject that we're talking about, though, you know.
Oh, yeah. No. We're in sync, man. We got a good flow going, Teju. Yeah. Appreciate you, man. No doubt. Yeah. So want to get your opinion on the Salal that the Western African countries, Ibrahim Traoré, and what he had done in Mali and Niger, along with Burkina Faso and other countries. I just read where over the computer, where I think it was Senegal or one another leader. No, Eritrea was upset and wanted to kick out the Europeans. I think this is going to happen. I really do. I really think this is going to happen. That, you know, what is really necessary for African people and African people to control their resources and become players in the world instead of the pawns that we have been is for Africa to unite. There is no doubt in my mind, I don't know about how you feel, but there's no doubt about in my mind that a one Africa, unified Africa, what Kwame Nkrumah talked about, Patrice Lumumba talked about, Thomas Sankara talked about, and what these guys are talking about today is that's the salvation for African people. Is one Africa.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, one Africa basically and just sharing resources and coming up with a governance perspective. So even if attacked and one of the faces of that leadership is eliminated, it's not happening. It's not gone. It's not like we're getting set back like what happened with Lumumba, what happened with, you know, Thomas Sankara, what happened with, no. We turn the next page and we continue to move on because what's most important is to control our land and to control our resources and to make Africa, you know, because Africa has more resources than anybody on the damn planet. Africa is the middle of the. Africa is the middle of what was that? Pangaea.
Well, see, and the thing about it, that's what everybody wants some, okay?
Yeah.
But the other thing about it, too, is this. The problem that happens is that when Traoré and the others who formed the three-country agreement, now it's under attack. And the thing about it is white people, okay, unify in the attack against other people.
Right, correct.
So, what's happening is now all of the white countries, right, who see Traoré and the others doing that, all of them are meeting saying, how can we crush this? Mm-hmm. The same way they did Nkrumah, the mm-hmm. same way they did Idi Amin, the mm-hmm. same way they did everybody who stood up against them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right now that they aren't letting us know that they're doing that, but trust me, they are meeting to
yes.
do that.
Yes.
Okay. The problem is that it's going to always be under attack. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes, and the confusion is those of us who are of African descent around the world are subject to the news and the information
provided
that Europeans country. And their That's descendants
right.
give us.
That's
so
right.
we don't know exactly mm-hmm. what's happening. See.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the problem. And again, they're going to come under some serious attack from two directions. One of the directions they're going to come under attack from is from Arabs and Arab people, because they are absolutely dependent upon Africa, even mm-hmm. just to live. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're dependent upon Africa and the rest of the world, dependent upon Africa, the land of resources, right? Okay? And so the problem is, that's going to be interesting, or that's going to be important to continue to pay attention to, because we don't know what's going to happen. But I guarantee you, when they form that triumvirate, when they form that three-country group like that, hey, right now, Arabs
mm-hmm.
and Asia and Europeans and all European derivatives like United States, et cetera, are meeting talking about how can we destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be interesting, but the battle ain't over yet. And one of the reasons the battle ain't over yet is because we don't have what white people have. And what white people have is absolute white unity worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
See? And we don't have it. Reason why we don't have it is this. We're civilized.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're civilized people, okay? Mm-hmm. There's no way on earth we as African people can think in a way that would allow us to do what white people did to the indigenous people on this continent.
Mm-hmm.
What white people did to the indigenous people in Asia, the indigenous people in Africa, the indigenous people on the islands. Our brains don't function like that.
Mm-hmm.
When Africans went around the world over right. and over again in the 1300s, okay, in the BC era, okay, when Africans went around the world, okay,
mm-hmm.
they did not destroy
right.
the people
right.
that they encountered.
Right.
And also, when Asians went around the world, okay, they didn't destroy the people that they came in contact mm-hmm. with. What they did, in fact, okay, was to have people there and leave them there and let them adopt the culture of the people there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the instruction from Genghis Khan, okay? And that was also the instruction of Abu Bakr II,
mm-hmm.
okay? This was the, hey, go there, find out what's happening, stay there. Okay, and we're going to be traveling back and forth, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come out of Europe, well, kill everybody, take everything they got,
yeah.
make
yeah.
them have your
yeah.
all make them have your financial structure, make them have your linguistic structure, make them have your religious structure, make them have your political structure, make them have your family structure. Mm-hmm. Those are the five institutions in every culture. And like when Europeans went where they went, they destroyed all the five of the people they contacted, and they emplaced them with the European five, which is what we're living under today.
Mm-hmm.
Our definition of family is not the traditional Native American, Asian, or African definition of family.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Euro definition of family, a man, his wife, and children. That's the Euro definition of family. So when you talk about family, that's basically what we talk about now that we speak English and we've been Europeanized. But when you talk about family in those other cultures, you're talking about people who are related to those who are related to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now we want to say, well, they're extended family. No, they're family. And I refuse to say extended family
mm-hmm.
because I'm still using the European definition. Okay? And I say rather than calling them that the extended family, I call that family, and what the European structure is, okay, I call that the restricted family.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than call this the extended family, I call that the restricted family. And I call family what we Africans have, what the Asians have, what the natives in this country have before the Europeans came. So that way, I'll have some control over what the language does to my way of thinking.
And see, that's the thing. Because we have been impacted by this language, this language specifically, you know, we visualize, we dream in that. Even, you know, it has deeply confounded us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And although we try to communicate with one another, a lot of times it's not effective because we're using somebody else's language,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, and the thing about that, speaking linguistically, what we did to communicate to ourselves is to retain certain sentence structures and certain words, right, to maintain the African concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, in Europe, there are certain tenses of the verb, right, or should I say in English. Since we're talking English, mm-hmm. I won't get into the other European languages right now. But in English, there are certain tenses of the verb. Present tense, past tense, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Future tense, past perfect, future perfect. Those are the five tenses in English, okay? Now, in Africa, there's two or three more, okay? And so when we spoke English, we tried to say African concepts of time in European words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because there's an African verb which says, you know, Muyolo. But that's Yoruba. Wait, okay. And you know what that means in English?
What?
I'm getting ready to go.
Oh, okay.
And so here's what happens. So that's why we say I'm finna go.
I'm finna go. That's for sure.
Yeah. 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 But see, in Europe, you're like, I will go, okay. I go, okay, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Okay, gone, I will have gone, okay, all that. But I'm saying, see, we don't have in English the concept of Africa that says I'm making preparations to do it, okay? Mm-hmm. So then we say, I'm finna go, okay? Hey, what you doing? I'm finna eat,
mm-hmm.
okay? Now, what does that mean, I'm finna eat? That means like, hey, I'm getting ready to eat. But we don't have that verb tense in English to say, I'm getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
And we also don't have the verb tense in English that says how long ago it happened. Okay? See? Yoruba. Motishie lai 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 lai. That's Yoruba. That means I did that so long ago. All right? Now, in English, there's no way to say I did that so long ago. Okay, you'd say I have done that, right? But now the African concept in the brain, right, to take the English words and to make African concept, hey, Teju, did you wash the car? I've been done did that. Okay. Now, those are actually African tense of thought to say, I've done it so long ago, we don't even need to be talking about it.
Yeah, I've been done did that. Yeah.
I've been done did that. Right. Yeah. And also, it's saying, I'm almost insulted about you asking me if I did that. No, really. Because, you know, I've been done did that. You know, the attitude that you have with it. Hey, Tajay, man, I've been done did that.
Yeah.
You know, the attitude with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm just saying that the thing about language is this, that we take language and we Africanize it to the point where we can still communicate African ideas and African concepts of what the world is, mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been done did that.
Right. Okay. And see, there's no tense in the English language that says, I'm fixing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there is in African languages.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fixing to do that.
Well, you know, there was a big issue because of how dictatorial Europeans are in terms of them imposing themselves on other cultures, and particularly mm-hmm. on us. You know, that, you know, there was Ebonics.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know that and again, understanding the Ebonics movement was it was a very, very sincere idea to let people understand, particularly in the educational area, that Black people were not necessarily speaking incorrect English; we were speaking Africanized English. And it was called Ebonics, of course, for the word ebony, right?
Right.
Meaning, you know,
black.
Meaning dark black, like
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was called Ebonics, right? But the thing is that whereas that was wiped out. So all of a sudden, like, oh, that's just Ebonics. But they never even gave Ebonics, right? They never gave Ebonics any respect, okay? They didn't say, well, Ebonics is a way to speak English, and this is how they say. And so what they did was they just, and many times, just did the grammar totally wrong and said this is Ebonics.
Huh.
When Ebonics indeed is really a Creole. And what a Creole is, like, okay, there, first of all, there's a pidgin, and then there's a Creole, right? And a pidgin is when you take your language structure and you put in the words from a different language. Okay, that's called pidgin, and sometimes pidgin English, right? So it's called pidgin.
Give me an example of that.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take English words, and I'm going to speak an African concept of the verb again. When I say, I'm finna do that. I'm fixing to do that,
mm-hmm.
right? Then that's a pidgin. What I've done is taken an African sentence an African sentence structure, and I've dropped in English words, okay? That's called a pidgin, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it gets to the point where, and of course, that is often a trade language, right? That's often the trade language when we're talking a pidgin, you know? But like when you get to a Creole, what a Creole is when that is the basic language the person speaks, it's called Creole, okay? And that's linguistic, okay? So we speak like Ebonics would be actually a pidgin English, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all cultures that have been invaded, or all cultures that put try to speak, or should I say all cultures that speak the vocabulary of a different language in the sentence structure of their own language, then that's called pidgin. It can be pidgin Chinese, pidgin Japanese, pidgin English, you know, pidgin whatever language it is, pidgin French, it doesn't matter. That's technically in linguistics, that's called a pidgin. All right. And then when that's the basic language that you speak, it's a Creole. So when we talk about black folks in the United States, basically what we speak is a Creole. For some of us, all we know is that language, which is the African concept with European words. That some of us, that's the only language we speak. When that becomes a basic language you speak, that's when it's called a Creole.
A lot of Creoles, well, of course, in New Orleans and the South.
Well, yeah, but see, that's why they talk about Creole, because what is it? All right, you got the Creole, basically, what were they? African people. No. African people or whatever people. But what they did was they took French words, right, and then they put it on their own sentence structure, all right? And that was true for the Acadians that came out of Canada and came out of, you know, northern parts of North America and went down to New Orleans and stuff like that. So you got, that's where you get the word Cajuns. They're the Acadians, right? And they came from Acadia and Canada, et cetera, et cetera. And they went down to the New Orleans and the Louisiana area, and they were white, the Acadians, right? Okay. But the Creoles were a mixture of African and native people here, okay? So then there's a difference between being Cajun and being Creole, because Cajuns originally were white, okay? And they traveled out of, like, Acadia, which was in Canada, actually. They traveled out of Acadia down to Louisiana,
okay?
And so those are the Cajuns. And they're different than the Creoles, okay? Anyway, I know I'm getting way off subject, whatever we're talking about.
We're still talking about linguistics and how it forms. You know, my lady Ann sent this to basically, you know, substantiating what you're talking about. She says her Jegna, Anita DeFrance. I know you know Anita. My friend Ann, she says, my lady Ann says, her Jegna was Anita DeFrance. I know you know her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She said Ebonics was Africanized English. Called it Africanized English. Would you agree with that? Ebonics.
Ebonics?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But you see, but I think it'd be good to define what part of Africanized it was.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is English on an African sentence structure.
Mm-hmm.
You see, English on an African sentence structure. And of course, we African people have a whole bunch of words that are still African that we speak. And as a result, wherever we went, the other people started speaking some of that too.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I remember you did a ping on that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about those languages.
I got a whole workshop on that particular stuff. Because, see, we don't know. And then we are told, particularly in children, that, like, what we're speaking is incorrect. Mm-hmm. When we say, that's incorrect. We're told that's incorrect. When it's not incorrect, it's an African word.
Mm-hmm.
It means to the affirmative, right?
Right.
That's an African word. Mm-hmm. the Yoruba language, the way they say it, they say, aha.
Aha.
Okay? All right?
Aha.
And the Mende people of Sierra Leone, they say, mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
The Akan of Ghana, they say, aha. All right? That's Ghana, right?
Yep.
Nigeria, mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
And then Mende, there's some form of and the way you say no, you say mm-mm. All right. Okay. And so that's Africanized, and that became such a thing. And I remember when I was young, don't say mm-hmm,
right.
Say yes, say no. Yeah. Hey, hold up. That's wrong. Okay, first of all, when I was a little kid and went to the white school, I got an attitude. You ain't going to tell me my mom and daddy is wrong. So later for you.
Right on.
And and at one time they said that I was the worst student they had ever seen. Yeah, but anyway, the point being is this, that See, if we, wherever people go, they bring their language right. with them. Okay, no matter where you go on earth, we speak pieces of German, we speak pieces of Native American, mm-hmm. we speak pieces of African, we speak pieces of European, we speak pieces of Islander music, Islander language. We speak pieces of everything, mm-hmm. right? Because everybody who came anywhere,
they brought their language,
left their home and came anywhere, yeah. brought their culture with them.
Yeah. Logic.
There's mm-hmm. so many things that we say that are Asian that we don't know they're Asian.
Mm-hmm. But you okay. know, there's an issue, Teju, is that, you know, it's been said how, in fact, in ASCAC's work,
mm-hmm.
It says, how can you free yourself in somebody else's language? How can we free ourselves in European language? We must develop a language of ourselves. And I know we have a brother caller, brother Rick, he's always talking about we need a language that can be separate from the European language and have some cultural privacy.
And they made sure that we didn't have that cultural right. privacy by driving the language out of us through punishment, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
But the idea, I agree that we need it, okay? But being a realist, I don't think we as a people will ever have it. I'm going to tell you why. Because Africa right now has clearly 500 major languages and over 2,000 languages. Mm-hmm. So to try to morph that into a single language, okay, that's not possible, all right? So the thing about it is, like, that's really why Swahili was developed along the
right.
coast.
And that's what it, to me, that's what should happen. We should, you know, at least have a language of business, a language of some kind of conformity, mm-hmm. and that could be
well,
key Swahili.
Well, a lot of people have said that about Swahili, because Swahili is not a language of any particular culture. It's a language of, like, the whole, like, East Coast.
Right. Eastern part of Africa.
Of Africa, yeah. The East Coast Kenya. Of Africa, up and down the coast. Mm-hmm. Now, they speak their own language, but their trade language and the language they yes. speak to understand is Swahili, right? Mm-hmm. And there have been attempts to do that in other parts of Africa, right? Mm-hmm. But because of the cultural pride, et cetera, didn't nobody want to say, well, we're going to choose one language. There's even been attempts there to make an amalgamation, a combination of all the languages, and come out with one language. They did that. I forgot what year they did it, and I actually forgot the name of it because I haven't researched it in a long time. Mm. But they did that, and they came up with the language, and some people were speaking it, okay? But of course, that was disrupted by invasions and right. and economic troubles that, you know, put in from the Western world, from white people, mm-hmm. and their destruction of everything that Africans try to develop on their for themselves. Okay,
right.
The Europeans are dedicated. Let me just stop saying that. White people are dedicated to destroying anything that black people do that will allow them not to be connected or dependent upon white people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's just how it is. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, Teju, we're going to take a break. It's the top of the hour, and when we come back from the break, I want to play a little piece. Have you heard? I'm going to play a couple of songs that you requested, but have you heard this cat named Howard Nichols? Howard Nichols is giving a TED talk, so to speak, I guess, and he talks about why Africa must remain poor, why Africa. We cannot ever allow Africa to unify.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I did see that. Right,
yeah, I'm gonna
right.
Play that. I'm going to play mm-hmm. that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that because that's the problem. But we're going to play some music. We come back from the music, we'll play that, and then we'll gauge in conversation and take some callers. We got a number of people who are in the queue to listen to the program. So we'll do that, okay? All right. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie. on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
I try to play my playback.
Yes.
Hello.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Teju, are you with me?
Yes, sir. I kind of got lost a minute, but all right.
I know.
It's back together.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to play this piece. It's not that long. And this is Howard Nichols. And I don't know, man. I tell you, this invokes a lot of anger in me. This piece,
okay,
because of how smug and arrogant he is.
And, okay.
And, you know, and I just want to jump through there and just beat the shit out of him. You know, it really does.
All right.
Okay. I mean, righteous rage is what I call it, of course. Righteous rage, you know.
I hear you.
So check this out. It's not that long, so check this out.
Okay.
Sub-Saharan Africa has been fundamental to the global prosperity of the advanced countries. Okay? And Africa had a role to play. It has a role as a raw material producer. We will not allow Sub-Saharan Africa to escape that. Okay, we do everything to keep Sub-Saharan Africa where it is, also impoverished. It's absolutely vital for the prosperity of everyone else. So let's get clear about that. Okay, and this means all the economic structures, all the global institutions, and the economics we teach everyone is all designed to keep Africa exactly where it is. And whether it is Europe or US or now China, it's always the same. We need Africa to be impoverished because we need those raw materials and we need them dirt cheap. Okay, so that's the message. It doesn't mean to say that there's nothing Africans can do. Of course there is. Okay, but this is the opposition that they're fighting. This is what it's about. Because if Africa does do something different, I assure you living standards of all those in Europe and North America and Asia is going to fall. Okay? And that is a big price to pay. I assure you that the West is not going to allow that without a big fight. Okay, so this is what it's fundamentally about. What I want to show you is how these structures are operating. It's just 20 minutes, so we can't do very much, but just to give you a little bit of an idea. And why I keep the ideology part there is because we are part of the producers of ideology. At universities and academic institutions, we are complicit in this whole enterprise. Okay, so the job of many Western academics is to convince Africans they have to keep doing what they're doing. Okay? And to show them, it's your fault that you're poor. It's not our fault. It's your fault that you're poor. You know? So this is what we do in academic institutions. And I want to show that as well. And to start, this is what it's basically about, so you know what it's about. But I want to just show you the extent to which Africa is specializing in the production of raw materials and basic agricultural goods. We know the basic forces that have caused this underdevelopment. We know it's colonization. I will not discuss that very much because my colleague speaker is going to go into some aspects of this. But I do want to discuss the global economic structures, the global financial institutions, and economic ideology, briefly, to give you a flavor of those. Let me start with this. You can't really see it so easily, but if those of you are interested, you want the PowerPoint, I'm sure we can make it available to you. But the thing that you really need to see is the top line. Okay? And the extent of dependency is captured by this statistic at the top. Okay? And you compare it with other income groups. And what you see is essentially in that one statistic how dependent sub-Saharan Africa is on raw material production. Okay, this is the very heart of what makes sub-Saharan Africa beat. Okay, here, just to have a look at one very important additional statistic, with all this export coming from sub-Saharan Africa, how much does sub-Saharan Africa account for in terms of global trade value? We know there are vast resources coming from there, but look at the bottom line in terms of global trade value. Look at that. 0.5% 1975, 0.95%, going down to 0.1. Meaning that with all these vast resources being produced, how much are they getting for it? Nothing. Nothing. This is a very significant piece of data. Then I just want to show you what has happened to sub-Saharan Africa, because what we know, and from all studies, no country ever develops without manufacturing. Okay, producing raw materials will not take you anywhere. Producing basic agricultural goods will not take you anywhere. And let's have a look at how much manufacturing activity takes place in sub-Saharan Africa. We can look over the last 15, 20 years. And we see manufacturing has actually declined as a percentage of the total. This is percentages of total production in sub-Saharan Africa, how much of it is accounted for by manufacturing. So this figure here is 17% of the total. Most of the rest, when we talk of industry, it includes manufacturing, but the bulk of it is mining. Okay? Raw material extraction. This is the bulk of it. And here we see actually raw material extraction has stayed the same. What has caused industry to fall is the fall in manufacturing production. This is deliberate because we will never, as Western economists, as Western policymakers, we cannot afford to allow Africa to industrialize and start producing manufactures. Okay, so we will do everything to stop that. And I'm going to show you how we actually block that.
Howard Nichols. Do everything in their power to block. But I think that's over. This was, I think this was said like about 10, 15 years ago. This particular piece I picked up of, in fact, when I looked at it, it was 6 years ago, 2019, you know. But, I mean, not 6 years, but it was 2019. Yeah. So, but anyway, this is the mentality of the Western world as it relates to Africa. Africa, and this one sister, I played her recently too, because she did a TED talk, Sister Melance from Sierra Leone. And she eloquent. You hip to her too. Yeah, she's beautiful, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, She says, how can you come with your...
But you see, we also have to include the Eastern world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also true about Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's also true about Arabs. You know, it's about Arabs and Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Who have done the same thing. You know, and we often overlook Arabs, but the Arabs and the Europeans came to Africa for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're there and they act like they were always there.
Right.
And they act like that they have a right to be there, because you cannot tell a white South African that they don't have a right to be there.
Right. And they don't.
You cannot tell, okay,
mm-hmm.
an Arab in Northeast Africa that they don't have a right to be there.
Mm-hmm. And they don't.
but you're
right. Well, of course, but you know the thing about it, it ain't never in this world what's right. It's about basically, which is why we as a people were conquered. One reason, we were civilized and they were savage. Only reason. I mean, we never went, African people never went to another continent to take people or to take resources.
Never.
And we went around the world before they even knew that the world was round.
Abubakar out of Mali,
And even before him. Because the thing about it is that the people went from Africa, in the BC era and went around the world. And then what happened when the Europeans came there, they saw, like, different sculptures and stuff.
Like the Olmec.
Yeah, like Olmec, but not on. But see, not only that, even when Abubakar the second went there, he said he saw black people. Columbus said he saw black people, Because we had been around the world in the BC era. Okay. But again, they can't teach that because then their their house, whatever they got, will come crumbling down. And they can't do that. Plus, also, they'll make sure that if you try to teach it, you will get fired.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Because all those institutions that you mentioned when you gave my little resume, you know, I got fired from all of them. UWM, Marquette, Dominican College, and the Milwaukee Public School System. You know? So, hey, but then again, I couldn't push the other narrative, man.
Right on. I hear you.
I couldn't. Even when I was taking math, I couldn't call it the Pythagorean theorem. A squared was B plus B squared equals C squared. I couldn't prove that. I called it the pyramid theorem because they knew that you can't build a pyramid. And Pythagoras, of course, came there,
Thousands of years later.
And that's when he made up, hey, this is how he did. And of course, and then of course you got these Euros talking about, well, they did not know pi. They did not know pi, you know, 3.1416, et cetera. They did not know pi.
They knew
and
all
like,
that.
Look, and all, but look, in their hieroglyphs, they describe it. And he just didn't know that, but he wanted to think that they didn't know it, that it was a new European discovery, et cetera. Which is like, you know, that's what they're going to do anyhow. But anyway, I don't want to, like, dwell on that as much as I
want to get
and
some,
back to like, some of what we were talking about.
I got a number of callers in. I'm going to see if they want to jump in the conversation. Of course, you know what to do, callers. Hit star twice, and that'll let you in. And we're talking with Brother Tejumala Oluboni, Brother Teju out of Milwaukee, a multidisciplinarian. You name it, he's done it. In fact, if you ever had an opportunity to go to African World Festival in Milwaukee, there's a big that mask is from Nigeria, correct?
It is from the Benin culture of old Nigeria.
And you carved that out of styrofoam. Is that correct?
Yep. So we could pick it up. You know?
I mean, it's detail. Oh man, you're just dynamic, brother. So give us a call. Okay, we got a caller. Brother Marcus. Brother Marcus. Good afternoon, Brother Marcus. Good afternoon, Brother Marcus.
You hear me, brother?
I can hear you well. Go ahead. You're talking with Brother Teju. Go ahead.
Yes, my brothers. Man, I like this brother here. This brother here taught the truth. He taught the unadulterated truth. Because them Arabs and them Europeans, you know, they've been robbing black people for so long. You know, as quiet as a skip, you know.
Yeah.
Right now, this European here, this one right here in America, you know, he's going into Africa right now trying to buy gold, you know, to shore up his economy here, you know. Right behind the scene now, he talk this yap about black people, but behind the scene right now, mm-hmm. I know somebody who he buying for the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
He buying to show the U.S. government to show up the economy because their economy is collapsing, you see? But they talk this yap about black people. But I love this brother here because this brother tell the truth.
Yes.
You know, let you know the truth, my brother. And I appreciate you bringing him on, you know, because even myself, I am, you know, I don't speak the Queen's English. I speak the patois. I didn't say we call it patois in Jamaica. You see, it's we take the English and we break it up and we use it. And they don't like when you talk like this in Jamaica. They say, oh, you're not educated. You're not educated. They say, yeah. I tell them in their face, but I'm not a European. I'm not an Englishman. So to hell with you. You know, as long as you understand what I say, that's it, you know. So I run them white, black people, you know, black, white people or whatever, them Oreos, because that's what they are, Oreos,
yeah.
You know, them black outside, but like some of them Nigerian. Some of them Nigerian, you see what's going on in Nigeria now, he tell the people in Nigeria, oh, you can't protest to with Burkina Faso. That man, that Tinubu, that guy there, him,
mm-hmm.
he should have died at childbirth. I'm telling you, his mother should have aborted him. It was better him never born. I'm telling you, you know. But I love this brother and my brother. Keep on keeping on, in spite of what they do. They can't stop you.
All right, brother.
My brother.
Thank you.
All right, brother Marcus.
All right.
Yeah. He spoke about the patois, which is what they say, you know, that the Jamaicans speak a patois, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, anyway, not spend a lot of time on that, but I appreciate the brother because that means that, like, people from different parts of the world of African descent kind of see it the same way, you know.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Let me get Brother Irv in here. Brother Irv, good afternoon.
Baboji, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, dear brother. Go ahead.
Baboji, this brother is fascinating, man.
Irv, if you ever met this brother, man, you would trip out. I love this man. I've loved him almost all my life, you know, because he embraced me when I was a kid, man. He kicks my ass every now and then. Oh, yeah, he jumps on me, man. But that's Teju.
I can hear it coming through his voice and the things that he's saying. That this guy then lived a life. I mean, we just got to sit down and just talk with no filter.
Well, he has to come on more often. I haven't had his ass on the program, what, how long? About 2 or 3 years ago, Teju?
I think probably before COVID.
Oh, yeah, before COVID. Exactly. Before COVID. That's like 5. Wow.
Brother, I want to – let me say this. I can give you all the praise in the world, and it's well-deserved. But I wanted to say something about language itself. I mean, because everything revolves around language, you have to communicate. And we can communicate in other ways other than speaking. But I heard a Senegal person, a guy from Senegal, say – that he was educated because he could speak French, but speaking his native language made him in that country appear to be uneducated. Is that amazing how Arugu could get your mind so messed up till you praise assimilating to someone else's culture, but you put down your own culture? That didn't happen overnight. Apparently that happened from childbirth, and then the child before that, and the generations is how we got here. And it appears that we can fix it over. Now all we got to do, man, is just read a book and make it. It don't work like that. Am I on the right track with that?
Well, brother, let me just say this: there are several people who have even written books on it. Okay, for example, What's the other French? Not Mali. What's the other French-speaking country?
Côte d'Ivoire.
No, let's see. Senegal. In Senegal, right? In Senegal, the leader of Senegal was taught in the French schools, and he had to go back. Who was the first premier of Senegal after the revolutions are over? I can't think of his name right now, but I'll think of it. But anyway, what he did was he had to go back and learn the traditional Wolof, okay, that's spoken in Senegal. And when he went back and learned traditional Wolof, the old people loved him because he spoke it the way the old people learned it instead of the modern colloquialisms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, look, you know his name. He was one of the four that chained Kwame Nkrumah, mm-hmm. Secretary. Ah, that's him. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Secretary. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So they, what they did was they, and he spoke it well, and he was Wolof, right? And, mm-hmm. So the old people liked it because he had to go back and learn it. They had totally erased his because he had been taken as a child to the colonial schools and had been punished when he spoke his own language and rewarded when he spoke French.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, wow. That's how the same thing happened for us, right? If you were in school, right, when you was in school, if you ever use an African pigeon, right? If you ever said, "Well, this ain't where I'm going. I'm going over here." Hey. Oh, no, that you don't say that. You don't say that. You say, "This is where I am going." You know, you ain't gonna say I'm going, right? Okay. So you know, and you aren't gonna say, "Well, I've been done did that." No, that's incorrect English when it's really like not. It's not incorrect English. It's English on an African sentence structure. So they drove that out of us to the point that those of us who have gone through their process called education really think those of us who haven't are less intelligent. See, and that's the problem that, you know, when you were talking before, that you know, what you said, brother, that they were saying, man, come on. They think you less intelligent if you cannot speak like white people, and just only thing it means is that you haven't been trained.
Wow.
All right. That's all it is, because all it is training. And the difference between training and education, if you don't mind me going on a little bit, I don't want to take all the time.
Go ahead.
There are other callers. But the difference between training and education is this. The word educate is like the middle of the word is duck. Okay? Mm-hmm. Duck, like duct tape. Or air duct, or aqueduct, right? And it means something that it flows, that directs the flow, right?
To bring out
air duct directs the airflow. Mm. Your aqueduct directs the water flow. Okay.
Wow.
So then, if you look at so the word educate, ed means from the middle, or from, okay, and eight means to make it happen. So educate means to make it flow from the middle or from what it is. So if I want to educate a dog, okay, I can teach him to like chase, roll over and stuff like that. But if I want to educate a dog, okay, instead of train a dog, I'm going to like go out in the woods and say, yeah, there's a rabbit, go get him. Because I'm taking what's inside that dog. But if I put him in a circus wearing a little skirt, pushing a basket, he's trained, he ain't educated. Mm-hmm. So the problem for many of us, we are trained, and we think that we're educated, but we're trained. And one of the things that we're trained to do is to put others down who are not trained in the Euro fashion. Mm-hmm. We call the way we talk wrong when we understand it. Mm-hmm. If somebody said, hey, well, this ain't what we're going to do today. Well, I want to do is this him. This is what I'm going to do. Oh, no, no, that's incorrect. No. You know what was said, function on it, right? Mm-hmm. But that's how we were trained. So let me not go on. Let me let some other callers
brother, let someone else talk. But before I do, brother, when you were speaking and talking about that, the system of racism, white supremacy, imperialism, and all these negative things, they actually teach you to turn on yourself. so that the Caucasian can just sit back and look at you he's already taught you that your language means nothing, that you mean nothing, that what you're doing is wrong, and then he'll sit back and let you teach that to other people. And what you're doing is you're breaking that chain. You're saying, whoa, you brothers ain't doing it wrong. You're actually doing it right, but they want you to believe it's wrong. So now because you have something to lose if you don't capitulate to the Caucasian, like a job or fame or something to that effect, so then you go along with it and you teach the others to be like you because you look successful to them. But the reality is they're gutting American Africans out from the inside. Because sure. It's not about what the outside looks like. It's what you think. And when you were speaking that, everything you said, I've been through that, brother. Mm-hmm. I've been through that whole, man, you sure talk stupid. But I just answered the question. Didn't you understand it? Yeah, but you sound stupid.
Right. Well, see, again, that's the training, right? That's the training, okay? That's the training. And unfortunately, they control the training.
That's right.
And then not only that, they reward those who are trained. They do not reward those who are not trained, and they punish those who refuse to be trained.
Right on. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's me. I'm one of those refusing brothers. Well, anyway, brother.
Well, look here. I speak. Fluent
Niggies. I love it.
Okay. Brother, not only that, I speak fluent English also. Okay. I speak German, okay? Mm-hmm. And I speak a little Yoruba. I speak even less Mende. The languages of Mende, I have basically haven't spoken them so long that I've kind of like forgotten it, right? I can kind of understand it when I hear it, but I've kind of forgot. But anyway, the point being is simply this. I speak fluent Nigi. And the reason I speak fluent Nigi is because I'm a nigga.
Exactly.
All right?
Wow.
Okay? And like, oh, no, wow. You ain't a nigga. Hey, don't tell me what I am or what I ain't. Okay? Now, I'm half Native American. I got my grandfathers met their grandmothers on reservations, right? My whole family from this side is half American Indian and half African, right? And I have been accused by many, like, oh, you talk all black, but you ain't all black, you know? And I say, well, yeah, I'm categorically yellow, but I want you to understand that's not the European mix. And you are correct, and I pardon me for taking the time to say this. I said, you are correct, I'm not all black. I'm half Native American. But I do want to remind you of one thing, and I want you to remember this. I may not be all black, but I'm 100% nigga. Now, I'm going to tell you what. If you want me to prove that to you, I can. And when you get up off the ground and walk away and they say, what happened? You're going to say, that nigga, okay?
What are you, a fifth degree black belt, man? Are you still training folks? You over 80 years old?
Sixth degree.
I apologize for messing at that degree, brother. Go ahead, Teju.
No, I don't fight no more, man. I'm 80 years old, but I still train. And I've trained champions who have won the AAU tournaments. I've trained champions who have, like, also me and a couple other people have trained champions who won the judo championship. Okay.
Wow.
All right. Wow. And I've studied Tai Chi, and I've been in China, Taiwan and China, stuff like that, with the master who was teaching me, a Master Casey, who was teaching me Tai Chi. So I've been around, man. I've been around these 80 years, but I'm a old nigga now. And here's the thing. I'm a carry me a brick, right? So these young fast. No, I'm carrying a brick, right? Look here. Anyway, let me shut up.
Hey. Okay. Where do you find these? No wonder you the way you are.
hey, let me say this too. I've known Oshi since he was 6 years old, man.
Damn.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Hey, we both had different names, didn't we?
Yeah. But you think he crazy now? You show, my goodness.
I love it. I love this, man. This is worth the price of admission right here, brother. Because I'm telling you, you are a walking documentary. You are a walking short story.
Yes, he is.
I mean, to put these movies on with these fictional characters, and then you got someone who's real that has walked the walk and done everything. You've been there. I mean, from what you're saying, and I have no doubt, no reason to doubt you, because you have no reason to lie. What are you lying for? But my thing is, you have been places, you've done things, you've seen things, you've touched things, you've made mistakes, you've had some good things and bad things. And these things need to be told, man, because life to me, it repeats itself. It goes, and it's only to me, and this is just what I think. I think there are only like 7 types of people that you meet in your life. Every now and then you'll meet somebody, you'll go, damn, this brother or this sister right here is, never seen nothing like that before. That's very, very seldom you see that in your life. I'm 66, and I've been studying this world and these people for a very long time. Irugu is not interesting to me. I don't, because Irugu keeps doing the same thing over and over again. The white folks, this game book that they use is old. It's been played out. You can see that in the global South as you see the power changing with the Brexit and all those types of things. The finances are moving because it's all played. You can't keep your foot on somebody's neck for so long. Either they're going to die or they're going to get up and kill you and all your children and your children's children. So that's what they're afraid of now.
Yeah.
Brother, you got so, Baba Ocean, we ain't got enough time for this brother right here.
I know,
this
man.
This is a series. This is a series. This ain't all a part one, part two. This is a series.
All
because,
right,
brother, you saying, and you're only saying little bits of shit. Excuse me for cussing. You're saying little bits of things. And I'm like, no, man, I want to ask you a question. More stuff. Tell me some more. But we ain't got that kind of time. Brother, thank you for listening to me. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. And again,
good brother,
it's in your hands now. And keep on doing what you're doing.
Right on, Brother Irv. My good brother from across the pond, Brother Paul, how you doing, man?
Baba Ochi, you've knocked it out of the park today. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Yes, sir. This is my dear friend and brother Teju.
Yes.
This is Brother Paul from the UK.
I'm overwhelmed. I've wrote so many notes that I could sell it as a book in this short period of time. But, you know, I'm grateful to the elder for the knowledge. I'm grateful. I know we ain't got a lot of time, so I'm just going to point out some of the things which he said, which maybe I can get some, I don't know. But listen, masks. I've collected masks for a long time. I've sold so many masks, I don't know. I'm a trader in masks, African masks. I've bought them for a lot of money. I've sold them for some money. So I really was interested. And I, more recently than not, I had this idea to start creating my own masks, but I've never materialized it. So to hear you tell me that this elder has actually made masks, that really struck a chord with me, because it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. You know what I mean? You know, I have a passion for African masks, and not just Africa, other masks as well, which I've bought and sold. So that was, I'm a martial artist. My dad's a martial artist. My brother's a martial artist. I've done martial arts all my life.
Okay.
My dad done judo. His brother left England and went to Canada and trained the Canadian team. So we're in depth in martial arts. So that was another thing when you started talking about that, struck a chord with me. But what I want to ask you, you talked about languages, yeah? And you talked about Creole and Ubonics. I once picked up a book by accident in a library. It was about dialects. And when I started to read it, it blew my mind. But it was one of them things where when you don't know something, it just overwhelms you so much that you say you're going to have to come back to it. But life got the better of me and time got the better of me and I didn't come back to it. Can you explain what the meaning of dialect is in relation to languages?
What a dialect is, it's like the same language spoken in, like, say, different areas, because once a language is established and then the people move from that area, or that they isolate themselves in a certain area, then what will happen is they'll speak the same language basically, but there's like local variations. See, we actually think that French, Spanish, and Italian, right, are different languages, but they're not. They're dialects of Latin.
Wow.
Okay? See, because they're not. So they all derive from one language. They're dialects of Old Latin. Okay? So, and wow. Portuguese too, excuse me. Portuguese, that's a fourth. So those are all dialects of Old Latin. If you really speak, if you can speak French very well, and I know some people who speak it, they can actually understand some Portuguese and some Spanish, okay? And I have one of my, you remember Meta Hochi, right?
Oh, yeah, Hochi. Oh, yeah.
You Meta remember Hochi. Meta. Now, yeah. Meta Hochi studied French, and he studied Italian, okay? Mm-hmm. And by studying French and studying Italian, he spoke Spanish, okay? He could understand Spanish just by those other two languages, which are dialects, okay, of Latin. So that's the difference between a dialect and a language, okay? So like, okay, if you look at it, for example, German, okay, English and Swedish, those are dialects of the same language, the Anglo-Saxon Germanic language. They're all dialects of the Germanic language, okay? That's why, for example, in English, we say water, they say Wasser, okay? And in Dutch, they say Wasser. And all of that is basically, you know, water, okay? And the same thing for book. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you
yes,
for that.
Sir.
It's
yes,
something
sir.
I'm going to have to look into again. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents, I'm born in the UK, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my parents come from Jamaica.
Okay.
And one of the callers, Brother Marcos, he talked about patois. Can you explain, yeah? Is patois and Creole the same thing? Is that just another name for the same thing, or is it something different?
Well, patois? No. When it becomes a Creole is what, that's when it's the only language. Okay? For example, a patois, what happens with a patois? Okay, is it, say, you and I speak, we want to talk, right? But we speak a different language. So what we can do is do a patois, which is like, okay, we'll keep the sentence structure, right? But we'll put in the different words from our language. See, that's what happened when you had the patois, like in Africa, the trade languages, et cetera, all right? Now, if a place, and that's the only thing they speak is that patois, only thing they speak is a trade language, then it becomes the Creole. Okay? So that is linguistically the difference between a patois and a Creole. And I'll tell you what, there's some books on linguistics. I encourage you to even, like, look into them and Google even what is the difference between a Creole, and you might pronounce it C-R-E-O, Creole, or sometimes they put a L-E on the end of it, but a Creole, and sometimes they'll write it C-R-I-O, but a Creole and a pigeon, P-I-D-G-I-N. And if you look it up, they've got a lot of stuff written on that, and you'll find all the answers to what you're asking.
See, we use, just for, I know I'm not going to keep it long, is, Brother Marcos will know this, we use a term, we said, adopi no fi frighten. What that means, adopi. Adopi, we say ghost, but it's a guy word, yeah, born from
right.
a tree,
right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And it means small dwarf, but they call a small dwarf a ghost, and we say adopi. So we say adopi no fi frighten. A ghost know who's to frighten. And another mm-hmm. word we use is unu. We say unu mm-hmm. unu fi muvo taya, meaning that unu is an Igbo word, and even mm-hmm. today they use the same word unu, meaning mm-hmm. you lot mm-hmm. move. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's powerful stuff. And you know what? You just remind me how I need to, because language is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And the
yes,
mere
it
fact
is.
That they use it to capture our minds, and we do need to fully understand what's happening to us. And thank you for giving that time and that information, man. It's so powerful. So powerful.
Well, thank you, brother. Pass it on. Don't give up. All you got to remember is we will win. They hit us with everything they could. They hit us with the destruction of our culture, the destruction of our language, the destruction of our religion, the destruction of us as a people, the destruction of everything around us, and we still in the fight. And they have realized, just a minute, if they hit us as hard as they can, and they've hit us as hard as they can with everything,
And we still
they'll hit us with everything. And it, so like when I was a little kid, we was in a little gang fight, okay? And then this guy from the other side walked up. He was the guy I was supposed to fight. And I hit him in the chest as hard as I can. And he kept walking forward. And I balled up my fist and I hit him again as hard as I can. And he kept walking forward. So you know what I did? I turned and ran, right?
Right.
Because it was just a matter of time before I lost. So here's the thing. They have hit us historically with everything they can, as hard as they can. And we still coming. It's just a matter of time before we win. Keep fighting.
Right on.
Where can I see the mask? Where can I see the mask?
A picture of it. I'll tell you what. If there's a way that I know we're running out of time. If there is a picture I could get to you, let me see.
Ochi will know. Ochi will know. We're tied up in the WhatsApp. You know.
Exactly. Right. So if you look up African World Festival, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
World Festival, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Say around 1990, around that time of the year, between 1990 and like 1995, et cetera. You will see the mask because that's when it's displayed in many places. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But it is a replica of a mask in Nigeria.
The original was about 10 inches tall. It's a Queen Mother mask from Benin, Nigeria. So I carved a 7'6" big sculpture of it. And
I want to see that.
Oh man, it's really big.
It's
big,
man. That's why you got to go to the festival, African World Festival, Milwaukee, in those years. Yep. It was a centerpiece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice one. Thank you very much.
All right, brother Paul.
I'm definitely look into that.
All right. Peace to you, my good brother. Got one more caller, but we got a minute left. Jay out of New York. What's up, man? You're on African Perspectives. I got brother Teju.
Hey man, go ahead and close it out. It was quite interesting what the brothers said. Hey, just keep doing what you're doing.
Right on, Jay.
All right, brother. Remember, we will win.
Yes, sir.
Hey, let me ask you this question. I hear a lot of people say that statement, we will win. What we gonna win, brother?
When we gonna win?
No, I said, well, you could say that too. I'm gonna say when we go win and what we gonna win.
Well, brother, here's what we gonna win. We gonna win the battle against our race, okay? And what we gonna win? We gonna win the right to determine our own world, our own destiny, etc., right? So the major thing about it is this. Look where we came from after the invasion. Look at what happened to us and look at where we're standing now. Our only problem now is that we're confused. There was a time when we were wrapped in chains and everything. We are only confused. We're working our way out of the confusion.
All right.
Well, let me ask you this also right quick. What's your take on Burkina Faso and how they go win?
Well, what they're doing now, I think, is taking a proper step. They got to be very careful because now the whole Western world, all white people are thinking about, all white people with power are thinking about how can we destroy this movement between these people, right? And they've done it over and over again, okay? Yes. So that's what's happening now. So we have to, like, recognize how they destroyed it before and see what we can do to prevent them destroying it again.
Agree. Got you. Have a good one.
All right, Jay.
Yes, sir.
All right, Brother Teju, thank you once again. Bless you, man.
All right, bro.
I'm finna close this programming because we end this program right. Like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Hope you enjoyed today's program, because I know I did. I'm so glad to have my good brother, Brother Teju, here on the microphone with me. I appreciate it. And all those who called in and those who listen. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. A Bibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace.